Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. And if you're the type of baseball fan that can't help but get giddy over prospects, we have the podcast for you. Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by minor league play-by-play voice Aram Layton, is the only daily podcast devoted entirely to the stars of tomorrow. Follow Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Now, I am just as surprised as you that I sound this calm, because it's 11:24 p.m. on Tuesday, May 4th, and the Red Sox have just defeated the Detroit Tigers 11-7. And I was losing my mind for almost the entire game, because they allowed the Detroit Tigers to score 7 runs on 10 hits. For reference, the Detroit Tigers currently are 8-22 with a minus 66 run differential. They have lost, including tonight, their last 6 games. They are 1-9 in their last 10, 9.5 games out of first place in the American League Central. They have a .267 winning percentage. Their team is terrible. This is not a team that you should be allowing to score 7 runs. This isn't a team that you should be allowing to score any runs. In fact, they had been shut out in like 3 of their last 4 games. They were swept by the Yankees over the weekend. And yes, I know that a win is a win, but this was a bad win. And you can still be mad about the way that a game was played and be concerned by things that were displayed in this game. And you can be adamant that those things need to change. So, in this post-game episode, I am going to talk about the good parts of this game, and I'm going to talk about the bad parts of this game. And then, at the end of the episode, I'm going to play the rest of my conversation with the wonderful Chris Castellani, host of Locked On Tigers, because we recorded together for an hour. And if you haven't already checked out our preview episode, that is the episode that came right before this one. We talked about Dave Dombrowski, we talked about Alex Cora and AJ Hinch, we talked about cheating scandals, we talked about how bad his team is. It was a really, really fun preview. So if you want to go back and listen to that one first and then listen to this for some context, you should do that right now. And of course, make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. I think Apple actually calls it following now, but make sure to follow on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get podcasts so you never miss an episode. And yeah, let's get into this game. So, first starters, because I like to start with the starters. Nick Pivetta tonight, for the 5th time out of his 6 starts this season, went at least 5 innings, had a quality start. He is now 4-0 on the season with a 3.23 ERA. His final line for tonight's game was an impressive 5 innings. He did give up 6 hits, 3 earned runs. He walked 2 batters and struck out 8. Those 2 batters walked is actually his low for the season. He's walked at least 3 batters in every other game that he's pitched so far, but his ERA is down to 3.23, and he did not give up a home run tonight. He's now 4-0 on the season and 6-0 in his career in Boston. And yes, for the millionth time, win-loss is an outdated record for pitchers, especially given the fact that this is a guy who rarely goes more than 5 innings. But I'll take the good stats. I'll take as many of them as I can get. But after Nick Pivetta, the bullpen came in, and this is the worst collectively that we have seen the bullpen look maybe the entire season. Austin Bryce lasted a third of an inning. He gave up 4 earned runs on 3 hits and looked absolutely terrible, extremely hittable. He gave up a home run. He didn't strike out a single batter. His ERA on the season is now 7.88, and I genuinely don't understand why Alex Cora keeps using him. I know that Alex Cora has this thing where he kind of plays favorites. You know, he loves certain guys on the team clearly more than others, and he will stick with them no matter what. But this is a little bit ridiculous at this point. Austin Bryce has appeared in 9 games so far this season, and he only has 5 strikeouts in 8 innings of work. In his last 7 games, his ERA is 9.95. He's given up 10 hits in 6 1/3 innings. This is a guy who cannot get it done. You genuinely, I don't care if you are up by 1 run or 10 runs, and you, like, this is not a guy that you can have on your team if you're trying to stay in first place. When he came into the game, the Red Sox were up 9-3. And he made it 9-7. And genuinely, I thought that even a 6-run lead would be maybe okay for Austin Bryce, and it wasn't. I'm sorry. Chaim Bloom needs to get new bullpen pitchers for this team, like, tomorrow morning, first thing. Step into your office at Fenway Park. Call anybody. Get Brandon Workman. He's not on the team right now. The Cubs DFA'd him. Please, literally anybody else. I don't know what Alex Cora's obsession with Austin Bryce is, but it needs to be stopped. After Austin Bryce managed to get one batter out in the 6th inning, another Cora favorite, Matt Andrees, came in and pitched his way out of the inning. Honestly, not that bad for him, but he still hasn't been that great, but he's better than Austin Bryce, which is not saying very much, but it's better than nothing. He was followed by Ottavino. And Ottavino was fine. He walked a batter, but he ended up striking out 2. And, you know, honestly, it's the best he's looked in a while. But then we had Darwinson Hernandez. And Darwinson Hernandez has been amazing lately. Darwinson Hernandez only lasted 1/3 of an inning, and he loaded the bases. And Matt Barnes had to come in and get a 5-out save. It was the longest save of his career, and he was the first Red Sox pitcher to record a save of 5 or more outs on 16 or fewer pitches since Jonathan Papelbon on July 21st, 2008, against the Mariners, according to Sox Notes on Twitter. Matt Barnes, by the way, was American League Reliever of the Month for the month of April. He also happens to be on my fantasy team for our Locked On Fantasy League. By the way, shout out to our Locked On Fantasy Baseball podcast, too. Check that out if you're a fantasy fan. Matt Barnes got it done tonight, but overall, the biggest takeaway from this game is that our bullpen is not good enough. This is like a team that you're supposed to come in and demolish to make yourselves feel better after losing 3 out of 4 to the Rangers. This was the first game that the Tigers scored 6 or more runs since April 14th against the Houston Astros. If you're doing my how many times in an episode do I say the word unacceptable drinking game, take a drink. This was unacceptable. The last takeaway from this pitching debacle tonight, and I know, again, they won, but still, important takeaways here for teams that actually are good that you're going to have to beat, who won't give you 11 runs, including a 4-run first inning. Nick Pivetta only walked 2 batters tonight, and that's a season low for him. But he has walked at least 3 batters in each of his other 5 starts. He has a total of 19 walks in like 30 2/3 innings of work as of tonight. And that number needs to go down because walks have been a killer for this Red Sox team. Now, before I talk about the offense on this team, do you know what's almost as delicious as a Red Sox win? A Built Bar. These bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, soft, easy to chew, coated in 100% chocolate. They have 18 amazing flavors, including nut and nut-free flavors. They come out with limited edition flavors every single season. There is definitely something for everyone, every flavor palette. We are big peanut butter brownie fans over here in our house. Even our dog is always begging. I guess she smells the peanut butter. For a limited time only, when you go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your first order. You can get your mom a box for Mother's Day. Moms on the go love a good Built Bar. Send her a box and you're sure to be her favorite, at least until the box runs out. So use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this offense. The Red Sox offense, I mean, because I'm sick of looking at the fact that the Red Sox gave up 7 runs on 10 hits to the Tigers, and I promise that's the last time I will say that in today's episode. The Red Sox, on the other hand, 11 runs on 14 hits, including a 4-run first inning and a 3-run second inning and a 1-run third inning. They put up 8 runs in the first 3 innings. Pretty good for a team that has been pretty lackluster at the plate recently. In fact, this was the first game in which the Red Sox had scored 8 or more runs since April 19th when they had an 11-run game against the White Sox, and that was only in the third inning. So tonight was their 5th game this season with 8 or more runs. This was really good to see because the Red Sox have been so low scoring lately, and it's been a league-wide issue. Even Alex Cora today said he's never seen anything like it. It's so different than when he played, but this game, offensively for the Red Sox, was very necessary. I even tweeted it earlier today that the Red Sox bats needed to wake up. And just to drive home how much they needed this. In the first inning tonight, the Red Sox scored 4 runs. That was more runs than they had scored in 4 of their last 6 games coming into tonight's game. They scored 4 runs in the first inning, and they hadn't scored 4 runs in 4 of their last 6 games against 2 also not great teams, which were the Rangers and the Mets. So I needed this game. They needed this game. Everybody needed this game. I mean, the Tigers maybe didn't need this game, but the Red Sox definitely needed this game. They had 4 home runs tonight. Alex Verdugo and Kike Hernandez both hit their 4th homers of the season. Xander Bogaerts hit his 6th. And just a reminder, coming up on Thursday, presuming he plays Wednesday, Thursday will be Xander Bogaerts' 1,000th career game with the Boston Red Sox. He will be the 30th player in Red Sox history to play in 1,000 or more games for the club. It's a huge deal. He is just continuing to be amazing. He is up to a .351 batting average with a .988 OPS on the season, and this was his 6th home run of the season. And he went 2-for-5 with 2 runs scored, 2 RBI, only 1 strikeout. Another great game for him. And another thing to note is that this Red Sox team tonight, moderately good with runners in scoring position. They were 3-for-10. They left 6 men on base. They definitely could have been a lot better. But all things considered, when you get 14 hits and 11 runs, I'm not going to needle you too much about it, though I will note that not every team you face is going to be the Detroit Tigers. Eventually, you're going to play some real teams. And by eventually, I mean that after the Orioles, they play Oakland, and then they play Mike Trout. So there is a difficult stretch coming up for the Boston Red Sox. And speaking of Oakland, I just have to give a shout out to Mitch Moreland because he hit a 2-run homer in the game tonight against the Blue Jays. We appreciate that both from a standings standpoint and also because Mitch Moreland is someone I will always root for, perennially underrated, amazing, amazing player. And I'm thrilled for him. And JBJ on the Brewers also homered today. I love to keep up with my favorite guys who are no longer on the team. Not the only reason, by the way, that I was thinking about JBJ during tonight's game, because Kike Hernandez out in center field missed a ball that JBJ definitely would have caught, and I know I wasn't the only one thinking about it, because as soon as that happened, the NESN broadcast weirdly started talking about Jackie Bradley Jr. Funny little coincidence there. But overall, this was a pretty good game for the offense. The only two people to note who really struggled were Christian Arroyo and Bobby Dalbec. And I'm less worried about Christian Arroyo because he has been really, really great for this team lately. And he's still hitting .284 on the season with a .721 OPS. One bad game from him is not a big deal. But you know who needs to be doing a lot better? Bobby Dalbec. He was 0-for-4 tonight. His batting average is now down to .190. He is in a serious hitting slump. And he's been in a serious hitting slump for a solid portion of the season. He's only homered once, and he only has 6 runs batted in. In his last 7 games, he's hitting 0-4-2 with an 0.80 on-base percentage and a 167 slugging. He has 1 hit in his last 24 at-bats. This is a guy who needs to figure it out fast. You cannot have that happening. And watching him tonight, watching him over the last few games, it makes me wish that Mitch Moreland was still on this team. His veteran presence, his gold glove defense, and his clutchness at the plate would be really, really nice when your team is having trouble with runners in scoring position and your first baseman is a rookie who is in one of the worst slumps I have ever seen. I mean, these numbers from him are like Andrew Benintendi in the leadoff spot numbers. We're definitely seeing a little bit of a sophomore slump. Not that he played in that many games last year, but still, this is not good. It is very stressful. But overall, again, a win is a win. And I tweeted during the game that this episode was going to be mostly me yelling. I stayed calm, but there were a lot of things that kind of aired themselves out during this game for the Red Sox that are problems that they're going to need to face really quick because there are good teams that they are about to go and play and they can't play them like this. At the very least, they can't beat them like this. You're not going to beat Mike Trout with this bullpen. Mike Trout's going to beat you. And it shouldn't take you 3 hours and 40 minutes to beat the Detroit Tigers. It just really shouldn't. This is only the second time in the last 8 games that the Sox have played a game that lasted more than 3 hours. They've either been losing quickly or they've been winning quickly, but Tom Caron noted the Red Sox haven't been playing long games like this. Despite how hard this win was for the Red Sox, I would still bet on the Red Sox. And BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing and you can track all your favorite team's action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
I will grow to my grave believing, and the series numbers reflected this, that 2013 team is maybe the most talented they've ever had. I mean, you had Verlander and Scherzer in their primes. You had Doug Fister. You had Anibal Sanchez winning an ERA title. You had Miguel Cabrera, who was on top of the world, fielder. I think that's the best team maybe in Detroit Tigers history. And they lost a series in Boston where they had more hits. They might have had more runs. They had a lower ERA. But it was a bullpen that gave up 2 grand slams that and ended up costing him. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a difficult pill to swallow. Like, I mean, the Red Sox had 86. The Tigers have 2013. Like, that to me will always be the year where all the pieces fit and they still weren't able to get over the hump.
Yeah, well, you know, without David Ortiz in that postseason, you guys probably do win the 2013 World Series, or at the very least you win the ALCS, because collectively during that postseason – it's in that 2013 like MLB World Series DVD, something like David Ortiz hitting, you know, 700 before that final game when they intent walked him and everything. I think he finished the season with like a 648 or something. The rest of the lineup collectively was hitting like 233.
No, nobody did anything. Yeah,
David Ortiz.
Napoli would run into one every so often, but besides that, the entire offense struggled in that series, and it wasn't their fault. They're going up against great pitching. No, I mean, I think to me, it's as simple as if Benoit gets that out, I think that they probably sweep, because John Lackey pitched the game of his life in Game 3, but John Lackey is also a pitcher who pitches best when the circumstances help him, like Game 6 in Boston and in 2013 against the Cardinals, like home crowd behind them, chance to clinch a series. I have a hard time believing that with a 2-0 series deficit, he was going to be tossing scoreless innings. And obviously Koji was just unbelievable. I mean, how rare is it that you win a 6-game series and your closer is the best player in the series? But he was unreal. He was unhittable that entire season at the lowest whip, I believe, of all time of any pitcher with a certain amount of innings. So, yeah, no, I mean, that one's still painful for sure.
That series, there was so much riding on that series for Bostonians. because of the marathon bombing, that it almost felt like they had to win that series. They had to win that World Series. They had to win that year for the city. And I remember the games that they did lose to the Tigers. I was like in mourning out of fear that that was going to be it. Like I remember like watching the 2004 World Series DVD about 10 times during that postseason because I needed comfort when I got too anxious because the whole city was just like traumatized hanging on this team to give them something to believe in again. And it was David Ortiz. And as much as that makes me sad for you guys, that one of your best teams in franchise history, maybe the best team in your franchise history. Well, I mean, Hank Greenberg, let's be honest here, but
yeah, I mean, close to it.
Right. You know, I feel like the universe just had to give that one to Boston, you know?
There was kind of that magic pixie dust that came with, and I remember I was a senior in high school at the time talking with my friends where I'm like, man, I look at every one of these matchups. I like our chances. Like, I think our rotation is better. I think that our offense is probably better, but there is that one outlier coming into that series that there was just a magic to that Boston team that Detroit just didn't have. I mean, because that was not just a great Boston team, but that was a great Boston team that came out of nowhere. I mean, there's been fewer seasons in baseball ever where a good team had as disastrous a year as what the Red Sox had in 2012. And with Val, I mean, that was as exactly. I mean, that was as bad as it gets. I think we swept Boston on the opening series that year. And basically they could have packed their bags and taken the next 159 off and probably would have saved their fans a lot of hardship. So they come back in 2013, you know, fresh coat of paint, new manager, coming back from the marathon bombing there. That was the one outlier that I was worried about is I think there might be some magic here. And they found it in that ALCS and again in the World Series.
I mean, 2012 also, that was Fenway's 100th birthday. And it was just the most insulting thing that that's how they played that whole year. I was so curious. I literally will never not be mad about that year.
I read an article, and I think this is true, that morale was so down that season that they just randomly had an eight-year celebration for the 2014.
I honestly have blocked out so much of that year, but I do know that in 2012, Johnny Pesky died. He was a Red Sox legend.
Right.
And he passed away, and only four players on the team attended his funeral. But they all were plenty happy to go to Josh Beckett's bowling party that night.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was real classy bad stuff. Year. I was so, you know, when people say sell the team now, or they say like, you know, chop up this team for parts and just demolish it and start over. Like if there was ever a team that needed to be rebuilt from the studs up more, it was the 2012 to 2013 Boston Red Sox. And you know, what's interesting is that now, this offseason that we just had, a lot of people are comparing the Chaim Bloom acquisitions and deals to the moves that Ben Cherington made that culminated in that 2013 team. And I think that so far, it's a pretty accurate assessment because, I mean, the team is in first place and they're doing well and nobody really knew what to make of them and nobody was really high on them, especially after the last year that they had. I mean, the parallels are there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see that. I do think that I remember coming into 2013 being like, the Red Sox aren't going to be as bad this year. I think that that was one of those years where every you step foot in that clubhouse, something was going to go wrong. There was just kind of that bad juju. I think that the 2013 team was more talented from opening day than people let on, but they just had a lot of question marks. Their pitching found it. Lackey had a resurgent season. Lester in the second half and in the postseason was unbelievable for them. But yeah, I think this year they definitely kind of had to scrap to find some pieces. But again, like last year as well, like JD Martinez to me is a top three hitter in baseball. And whatever batted ball data there was a year ago that said he wasn't great, I was telling people this guy's going to bounce back and have a 900 something OPS. He's one of my favorite Tigers of all time. I think I was so happy to see him doing what he's doing in Boston. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm a season ago. But you know what? One top five pick following, you know, some incredible runs of success, you guys would take that. I think that there is the patience is wearing thin for the Tigers fan base right now because there's not that comfort of
a 2004 or a 07 or a 13 or an 18. And because of that, this rebuild seems as arduous as ever.
Yeah. And, you know, when people ask me, like, why are you complaining about your team? You have four World Series. I'm not complaining about my team because I want them to win another World Series. You know, if they do, that's cool. But I've seen four in my lifetime. Like, I'm really fine. I'm good. All I really want is watchable baseball. I want, like, enjoyable baseball. I want to know going into a game that my team's not going to suck every single day. And for the last 2 years, that's pretty much what it was. And, you know, every few years in Boston, that's kind of how it is like they'll win a World Series, but then they'll be terrible for 2 years. And then, like, they'll somehow win another World Series, and then they'll be terrible for 2 years. You know, they go back and forth. They yo-yo. Like, the pendulum swings so far in both directions. So when people are like, oh, well, you just want more championships, that's so greedy. Like, first of all, I'm not a Yankees fan. So I don't base my entire existence around championships. And also, though, like, I think what most people want, I mean, yeah, people want World Series, but what I really just want at this point is, and what I've had this season, which has been really nice, is to go into every game every single day, not knowing the outcome and having hope that my team will win and that the game is going to be fun to watch. And bare minimum, that's what all teams should be striving for. And that doesn't mean that, like, there won't be rebuilding seasons. But when you have half of the league tanking just to get good draft picks, you're doing it wrong. And by you, I mean baseball. Like, people were encouraging the Red Sox to lose games last year so that they could get Kumar Rocker.
I've gone through that over the last couple of years where I, in 2019, I was totally, like, it got to a point where I'm like, you know what? Just the principle of this. I want them to get the number one pick to make this somewhat worthwhile. But when you're coming up on 4 or 5 years of tank mode, I'm with you completely where it's our expectations here for the Tigers were pretty low and they still kind of sunk below them. I went nuts about it the other day. Like, it's so frustrating to have a season that on May 3rd is essentially, I mean, it's essentially over. We're talking about a team that's not going to make the postseason. They're probably not even going to win 70 games. They have the worst record in baseball right now. That is crushing because it's not like the NFL where like the Patriots had a down year last year. That's 16 bad days or whatever it was, 10 bad days. I think they were 6-10. We're talking about a team that's going to have 3-4 months worth of bad days. That's a grind. And so I'm with you completely about just give me something manageable. Give me something watchable. Give me a team that in June, I'm saying maybe they got a shot. And over the last few years, that has not been the case here. And it's been brutal.
Yeah, I think that's what every fan wants is just to kind of have hope going into the season. And, you know, I feel like over the last 10 years or so, there's been less of that because there's just teams find it more beneficial to tank. And I remember on the last day of the season 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it was the season that the Tigers and the Giants were vying for worst place in the league.
2017,
It was 2017.
Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah. Pablo Sandoval had a walk-off home run.
To give us the number one pick,
Right. And that was the year that the Red Sox had DFA'd him, and he went crawling back to the Giants, and he was in their minor league system for a little bit, and then he ended up back on the major league team at the end of the season, and he hits that walk-off home run. And I wrote an article that I called Even When He Wins, He Loses. Because, of course, Pablo Sandoval would homer to cost his team the number one draft pick. Like, that would happen. But, you know,
I was grateful for it.
Yeah, I know. And I'm thrilled for you. Like, I'm so happy for you. But, you know, the thing that bummed me out the most last year was that you had more Red Sox fans rooting for the team to tank so that they could get a guy that before last year they had never heard of, Kumar Rocker from Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Then you had fans rooting for their actual current team. The sensitive, like, romantic baseball fan in me, that just hurts my heart because you want to root for your team every year. And you should never want your team to be as bad as possible. Like, that's just not how it should ever work. And I think it's one of the many general problems with where we're at in Major League Baseball, that's what a lot of fan bases have resorted to now. You know, I'm sure you have Tigers fans starting to cherry pick who they're going to draft, you know, next year now in May.
I put a lot of that on the organization, though. I mean, they've made no attempt. They've shown nothing in free agency that makes us think that they want to compete. And it's very frustrating. I mean, when you're coming up on 4 or 5 years of ineptitude, it's heartbreaking to see this. It's heartbreaking to get to a point where you know that it might be more beneficial for them to lose games than to win, especially the fact that it's been going on this long. It stinks. It really does. And this was the year where I kind of put my foot down and said, no, it's time we have some expectations. And we find ourselves here.
So this has been your May the 4th post-game episode of Locked on Red Sox. The force was moderately strong with the Boston Red Sox tonight, but it was not an easy win, and there are a lot of important takeaways that cannot be ignored. And I'm certainly not going to ignore them just because the end result on the scoreboard is a win, because ultimately these problems are going to catch up with you, and I would really like for this team to stay in first place. They've proved to me that they are better than what we saw tonight. Even with this amazing offensive absolute onslaught that we saw, I'm talking more about the pitching. This bullpen is either better than they were tonight, or they need to be better, or they need to be a different bullpen, as in different people. So thanks so much for tuning in to tonight's episode, or tomorrow morning's episode, more likely. When this episode is over, tell your smart device to play Locked On Today. It gives you all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow Locked On Red Sox at @LO_RedSox on Twitter. I'm at @GFSTARR1. Thanks so much for tuning in. Support your favorite team's minor league affiliates. Today was minor league opening day. Don't forget to follow so you never miss an episode. And as always, at every level of the game, go Red Sox.